I have the best stocked survival shelter in northeastern Pennsylvania. But everything has a shelf life, so I must eat and then replace everything that's about to expire. It's nice not to have to plan my meals.
You're eating 8-year-old tomatoes.
They're still good for another week.
You know, I think I might have some type of cheese in the back of my fridge you might like.
I've got some cheese you might like, too.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Gentlemen, how are we today?
4 days of college basketball.
I'm sure we'll talk about my UConn Huskies. Yeah. My UConn Huskies. Shout out to Hurley.
Yeah. The Big East is back, by the way.
Very back.
Slick Rick is back. That's what matters.
True.
These 4 days are outside of the NFL season, my favorite days of the year. I'm a huge college basketball fan, specifically the Big East. I was heartbroken when it broke up back in like 2011 and 12, but it's back. The teams are back. Even like the newcomers like Creighton and Xavier have sort of inherited Big East culture. I love college
basketball. By the way, I have to talk about Creighton real quick.
Yeah.
Baylor Shireman is my favorite player in college basketball.
Creighton's a fun team. They've sort of inherited, like I said, that Big East culture, man. They've become a Big East team. Even though they're like, where's Creighton? Like Nebraska?
Omaha, Nebraska. See?
Omaha, Nebraska.
That's how I know you don't read my tweets. Because I was talking about that a couple days ago. Every single year during March Madness, I Google, where is Creighton? And okay. Every single year I'm shocked to find out that not only is it in Omaha, Nebraska, because it feels, I don't know why, like it should be like a New Jersey, Pennsylvania type of school.
Right.
But it's Omaha, Nebraska. And they are also a Jesuit university.
What does that mean?
Jesuits, like Catholic off.
A denomination
yeah,
of religion.
Off-brand Catholicism.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like BC is a Jesuit school. Isn't BC Jesuit?
Yeah. I mean, Creighton has basically inherited Big East culture. Greg McDermott, their coach, absolutely stud, big, tall dude. Just fits what a Big East coach is, man. And even though they're in Omaha, Nebraska, they're essentially like an East Coast college, you know, in like New Jersey or something. And then Xavier, Sean Miller, Big East coaches is just Dan Hurley and now Rick Pitino. I mean, I just love everything about what the Big East is now become. And the tournament's been great. We knew it was a wild season. I don't know how many people follow college ball like that, but it's been mediocre at the top. And we expected these kind of upsets. Did not expect a 16 and a 15 to win, but man.
I was one of the people like, I like Purdue. Like, I think that, like, obviously they're a very good team, but they got a lot of heat down the stretch and a lot of people calling them fraudulent. And I was like, dude, like, they're going to blow Fairleigh Dickinson out of the water because they're like 10 feet taller than Fairleigh Dickinson.
Yeah, the shortest
Dude,
team in college. In
shout
the
out
tournament.
To shout out to Jersey. I mean, damn.
Yeah, Fairleigh Dickinson.
That was a fun upset.
Yes, great. They're calling it the greatest upset in college basketball history. I don't know if you're jumping on that take too, but after learning about how they weren't supposed to be in the tournament and how it's hard to disagree. So yeah, I do think. I mean, you can make the case that it was the greatest upset in college basketball history. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mizzou losing to another 15, which just right up their alley. Very classic Mizzou.
Yeah, they lost to Norfolk State years ago.
Yep, okay, and now they're losing to a bunch of nerds. So
look at you, Ethan. I didn't know you knew that much about college ball like that.
I'm a knowledgeable motherfucker, man.
Yeah, I got that in Mizzou. Yeah, lost to Norfolk State as a 15. Yeah.
Also, one of my best friends went to Mizzou. So it's like whenever they're in pain, I'm in pain, you know?
Yeah, Princeton. So. They blew him out, too. It wasn't even close.
No.
I actually changed the channel of that game.
Yeah.
Like I said, man, I enjoy these 4 days, dude. I wake up 10 o'clock, get a nice breakfast, at 12 tip off, go all the way till like Dude, the last game doesn't tip off till like 10:30 sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Like, you need like a reset. Like today, it's like, what do I do?
Well, I've just been listening to college basketball podcasts. Like, I just went to the iTunes store and I just, or the podcast.
Dude, the college basketball fans are like another breed, man. Like, I'm sure the podcasts are crazy, but like, what time did the UConn game end? Like, it was like a 6:10 or like a 6:20 tip. So it probably ended around what, like 9?
Something like that.
Right? Dude, they had a Twitter Spaces going on still at 1 a.m. Like, I'm sitting on my couch after the Gonzaga game's over. And I'm like, why is there still a Twitter Spaces going on? People were just still 5 hours later talking about UConn.
UConn can win it all. I mean,
they're my pick.
They were highly ranked to start the season, and they sort of fell off toward the middle of the season. But
I know I was sort of half joking to open the podcast. Baylor Shireman being my favorite player. Yeah. Adama Sanogo is my favorite player.
He's an absolute monster.
Monster.
Dominated that second half against Iona.
Yeah. By the way, how old is Drew Timmy?
Like 35.
You know he's got another year of eligibility if he wants to use it.
That guy's got to have a life insurance policy at this point.
I hate everything about Gonzaga. I hate Mark Few. I hate Drew Timmy. You go down the list of their players. Jalen Suggs was okay, but I just hate everything about Gonzaga. I hate teams that haven't won shit that just keep getting like anointed. Like, they are not a blue blood of college basketball. Sorry.
Oh, come on.
Stop.
Bro, you don't have to do a lot to be a blue blood in college basketball. I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. Michigan State's made 3 Elite Eights in 15 years, and they're a blue blood.
Tom Izzo
Nebraska has 3 10-win seasons in 15 years, and Nebraska's not a blue blood anymore in football. It's very different in basketball because it's one game elimination, and everyone recognizes that.
I just think Gonzaga.
It's different.
I can't deal. Gonzaga, blue blood, can't do it. Can't put them in there. Sorry.
Well, get used to
it. But the West region is a fucking going to be fun on Thursday. Arkansas, UConn, Gonzaga, UCLA. I want Gus Johnson to call that Gonzaga UCLA game. You guys remember that legendary Gonzaga UCLA game?
Yeah, of course.
Gus Johnson,
of course.
Adam,
Upset City.
Adam Morrison crying at center court.
Of course. That's one of the go-to videos when me and my friends are all hanging out at a pregame is just the Gus Johnson's best call compilation. And that clip is inevitably the one that gets everybody screaming it out at the top of their lungs.
And it's in Las Vegas, which makes it even better.
Electric.
I mean, think about it. We got the Garden. We got Las Vegas. I think we're playing like Kansas City in the Midwest or the South, some weird places. Louisville, Kentucky. Anyways. Yeah. I love March, man. Sorry to open the show with March Madness, but I love it. Can we start with Paris Campbell?
Yeah, go ahead.
I know you're so excited about this, dude.
Listen, when free agency first started and I looked at the free agent class and I looked at like, you know, like they have like projected value of how much these guys are going to get. Dude, I liked Paris Campbell coming out of Ohio State, dealt with a lot of injuries first 3 years of his career. You want to call it a breakout season in 2023 or 2022, by all means, go ahead. But I like a one-year deal for Paris Campbell is extremely talented, and you see his skill set, and you're like, wow, I wonder what Brian Daboll can do with this. Like, to me, it's just more intriguing than going and paying $8 million or $9 million a year for Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, I don't see an upside with Juju like I do see with Paris Campbell. And I understand the injury history. I mean, like, if you look at his, like, injury history from the moment he came into the league. His rookie season was derailed after he had an abdominal injury, a fractured hand, and a broken foot. So that's 3 surgeries in his rookie season to miss 9 games. His second season, he had a sprained MCL and PCL in week 2 that made him miss the entire season. And then his third year, he was actually got off to a good start. Then in week 6, suffered a significant foot sprain that sidelined him again, and he basically missed the whole season. So, yeah, it's a lot of injury history, but these are the type of moves you have to make that I think are better than, hey, let's just go and even though the wide receiver market sucks, we're just going to throw money at the top of the wide receiver market where, you know, I don't see upside with Juju and I don't see upside with Jacoby Myers. I'm sorry. And then you look at the contract that Adam Thielen got, and it's just like
Panthers just have money to burn, though. Panthers what just had fuck? Money to throw at the problem. It's different. Different situations, different players, different teams. For the Giants, it makes perfect sense.
I just think this is the route that a lot of teams should have gone. Smart organizations. If you need receivers, this is the route to go. These one-year deals, these two-year deals like with Darius Slayton, to me, it's better than, hey, I'm going to go give Jacoby Myers or Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 million a year. Like, I want to ask you guys, what is Jacoby Myers' ceiling?
A solid slot receiver.
A wide receiver too? That's his ceiling?
Well, he's slot. Not.
I just realized I've really been muted. A good wide receiver too.
Yeah, I'd say a solid wide receiver too. 800 yards, maybe 6 touchdowns.
But he was put on, I think he had like 700-something yards and a few touchdowns last year playing in that Patriots offense with Mac Jones and fucking Joe Judge and what's the
Matt
Rocket,
Patricia.
Yeah, Matt Patricia, Mr. Rocket Science over there. Like, I was calling for Jacoby Myers as, like, a good free agent pickup in the middle of last year. Like, 26 years old, he's a talented dude. But, like, again, like, why are you going to pay an inflated price for a guy like that in an admittedly weak market? Like, don't spend just to spend, you know? So, some teams felt that that was the way to go. God bless him. But our GM is Joe Shane, so we're not going to spend irresponsibly.
Especially when you see what the trade market looks like. Brandon Cooks went for, what, 2.5s?
Yeah, but like, that cap hit's egregious, dude.
It's only for a year, though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
the
but not a lot of teams can... Well, I think it's legitimately that. Like $30 million this year or something like that. Yeah. I'm gonna
look. The Cowboys' cap management is atrocious. It's been atrocious for a long time, but just trading Amari Cooper last year for nothing, only to have to trade away a few things to go get a replacement for Amari Cooper after trading.
They must have done something to lower his cap hit.
Well, I think Houston took some of the money.
Yeah, but I thought it was like it's only $16.5 million for next year if they keep him. It's only 12 and change this year. I thought it was way worse.
My thing is we're praising the Cowboys for getting Brandon Cooks, but they literally had Amari Cooper for similar salary last year. It's like, well, what changed? Now you're all of a sudden willing to pay for a receiver like that. But for the Giants, I think with the receiver room, the one thing that I think we can all see is that, and this is sort of what Joe Shane said, was the days of, hey, we need a jump ball guy or we're going to go pay a guy that is 6'5", but he can't get separate. Like, those days are over. Like, you, if you're going to be a wide receiver for the New York Giants, you are going to have to get separation. There's three important things to a receiver. You got to be able to catch the ball. You got to be able to separate. And you got to be able to run routes. Versatility is important too. And I think what they've done so far is they've gotten rid of receivers that can't do those three things. And they've brought back a receiver who can do two of those three things. We'll see if he can catch the ball still. And then the one that they added, Paris Campbell, can do that as well. So, look, are they done building their receiver room? No. But the one thing that they have done is they have told you what they want, and they've gone and got that. And I think that is very important. Does this – I think people now were talking about, well, now – you know, we're going to go draft a corner. It's like, no, I don't think nothing that they did in free agency is going to impact anything they do in the draft, except probably drafting a tight end in the first round. But I don't think they were going to do that regardless. I still think wide receivers in play. I think there's a lot of positions in play. Look, this is a roster that still needs a lot of work. Let's not kid ourselves. But from the season ending to today, we can all agree that the Giants got better.
Agreed. The name of the game, low risk, high upside.
Yes.
Bingo.
Nick, you're about to say something.
Well, real quick, I mean, that's what Joe Shane said, right? He's like, the meat of this roster is going to come through the draft. You know, the sides are going to come through free agency. We're going to make 1, 2, 3 signings, you know, in free agency, and everything else is going to be through the NFL draft. And I think that's the right approach.
Oh, I was going to say, the jump ball specialist is kind of going away. That's not really a wide receiver job anymore. That's more of a tight end thing now. The jump ball wide receiver is kind of something, a vestige of older offenses. I mean, pretty much everybody's running some take of a spread offense where you're going to have basically three basketball style athletes who are going to be playing basketball on grass. I mean, you heard a lot of the guys on the Dolphins talking about Mike McDaniel showing them basketball highlights of this is how you should be getting your release. This is how you should be trying to get open. That's the name of the game here, is finding ways to get open and make your quarterback's throws as easy as possible. The conventional wisdom used to be you got to get the jump ball guy for your bad quarterback to make their job easier. Well, no, if the guy can get into a wide open window, it's a lot easier to do that than to throw a jump ball. And the last point on this, all the receivers have different toolboxes, which is a useful thing now too, is you can line them up in a few different places. You know, Campbell has a history of lining up in the backfield. That's another wrinkle they have. Waller can be in line. He can be in the slot. He could be outside. You just became a lot more unpredictable by adding the guys you brought in. And I do hope they bring in another receiver in the draft, because there's always guys that are going to be available in those mid rounds who have enough upside that in the right situation, the right usage, you're going to be able to get something out of. And that's something that the Giants just haven't had out of that position group in a long time, where now there's like a genuinely, okay, the defense has to account for this player, and this player all on the field at the same time. Oh, and don't forget, Daniel Jones can run the ball if none of those guys are going to get open. There's just so much more open to this offense schematically and philosophically than there has been in the past, where it's been a lot of ugly meat and potatoes football that they didn't have a choice other than to play that way.
Yeah, I think if you look at both where they're picking in the draft as well as the wide receiver class, I don't think anything that they've done precludes them from taking a wide receiver at 25 or even later. Mm-hmm. But if you look at where a lot of these wide receiver ones are acquired, right? You draft one high up in the draft, it pans out, mazel tov, if you have a wide receiver one. If you're not able to draft a guy like that, a lot of these guys are acquired via trade.
Bingo.
AJ Brown, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill. Like, you have to trade for those guys. Even if they're disgruntled, and they all of a sudden become, you know, like, oh, like they're in a contract year or free. Teams are able to capitalize on the disgruntledness of these guys and trade them and get assets. Whether those are high assets or you see like a Brandon Cook style trade like we just saw with the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans, you have to draft these guys or you have to trade for them. Very rarely do worth it wide receiver ones hit the market in free agency. And we saw the Giants make that mistake with Kenny Galladay. So listen, at 25, is it likely the Giants find their wide receiver one? No. So unless something happens or that room has a vastly different grade on a player than the rest of the league and believes that that player can become like a bona fide wide receiver one, I sort of find it a little difficult to see them taking a shot at wide receiver there, because they're going into next season with a much healthier cap situation, and that can be their AJ Brown, Stephon Diggs offseason where they go out and they get a top 10 guy in the league.
I hear what you're saying on the trade stuff, but the receivers that you just named that are wide receiver ones, I don't believe any of those were top 15 picks.
Sure, but look at all the other receivers taken around them. Point being, it's harder to hit on a pick that late and get a bona fide wide receiver one.
Absolutely.
I think you can get good guys in the 20s, though. Yeah. I think we've seen solid wide receiver ones come through in the 20s. I mean, some of those ones.
For every Justin Jefferson, there's five Jalen Reagors.
That's entirely fair. I also think this draft is kind of weird in the sense that there's a few wide receivers I like. Like, I think there's a world in which Smith and Jigba's there at 25. It's not that likely, but I could see it. I'd be open to him at 25 if he was
there. I would love him at 25. He's my favorite receiver in the draft. But listen, the only point being, like, if you want that alpha,
you got to go get him.
I think the odds are, like, again, we'll see what happens this upcoming season. But with the cap situation looking like what it's looking like for next offseason, and we'll talk about Leonard Williams and his cap number and what the Giants may or may not do, I think that that may be a route that they explore next offseason.
Or you mean you can just continue to rack up good receivers and then have one elite pass catcher like Darren Waller?
Sure, you could do that route too.
Oh, I'm the Kelsey, wondering. The Kansas City idea, yeah.
Yeah.
And listen, like I said, and again, anything is possible because a lot of these guys, Paris Campbell is here for a year.
Yes. Right? Darius Slayton is here for...
Sterling Shepard for a year. So, like, none of these guys are the long-term solutions. Could they take, like, a Zay Flowers and holy shit, he's the next Stephon Diggs? Yeah, possible.
But I don't even consider Sterling Shepard an option right now. Coming off an ACL and Achilles, and he's over 30. Like, I don't know what you can expect there.
Let me
like,
ask you a question. Who's the Giants' best route runner right now? Sterling Shepard.
Probably Paris Campbell.
Oh, stop. It's Sterling Shepard.
Take the Urban Meyer glasses off.
Yeah.
He has
the last Paris Campbell highlight I remember, Urban Meyer was on the sideline. It's been a minute.
He is their best route runner. I'm not talking about health and well, if you're comparing Paris Campbell and Sterling Shepard in terms of durability, my friend, I think it's much, much closer than you think.
Talking strictly route tree, I've seen Paris Campbell on the outside.
Route tree or route running? Listen, okay.
Whatever you want to call it.
Fine.
We're getting lost in the weeds.
I think Sterling Shepard is their best.
I think maybe either I don't overrate.
You are definitely overrating. I think
you guys are underrating the addition of Paris Campbell and what he can do if he stays healthy.
Same thing with Sterling Shepard, best route runner, and Danny loves him. Yes, he does. Danny loves him.
When is he going to be ready? Is he going to be ready by training camp?
I don't know.
All right, there you go.
But really, the conversation should be around your guy Wandale Robinson.
Yeah,
because when he was healthy, Danny loved him. And I think
that was the worst
injury,
man. That injury fucking sucked.
I mean, he had what, like 10 or 11 targets the week before he went down. Like, he was coming.
He was coming. And that ACL, you just hate to see it because we were getting there with him and what he was going to be in his role. And for that to happen, it sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Talk about the defense a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to start with Leonard Williams? Because we were talking about this in our group chat.
Leonard Williams is a $32.26 million cap hit.
So before we start this conversation, let me ask a question.
Yes.
Because I genuinely am unsure of the answer. I probably should have looked this up, but this is why I have you two here.
Exactly.
If they cut Leonard Williams.
Yes. Is $20 million dead cap hit right there.
But I don't care about that. I care about next year. Is there dead money next year?
I think there is a void year in his contract.
Yes. Nick is looking this up, so we'll have an answer momentarily. So yes,
I think there's a void year.
I don't care about the dead money this year. I care about next year, and I think that Joe Shane cares about next year, and that's why. It's not like I've been like overly adamant, but we were talking about this in our group chat, and when we were discussing how much cap space the Giants need and what they can possibly do to create it. We've thrown those ideas out. I'm a huge proponent of extending Adoree Jackson. He's only 28. He's their CB1. CB1s don't grow on trees. Even if you use the 25th overall pick or a second round pick on a cornerback, it's a very difficult position to play. So he may not be ready. Nick, what's the answer?
$6 million in dead cap next year. Not bad.
Oh, then listen, either let him play it out this year or cut him, because you're bringing in A'shaun Robinson. He's not going to be a Leonard Williams replacement. He's being brought in for depth, but
he's a starter though.
Okay. But listen, they like to rotate and they've had a fair share of injuries over the years. So
if you're asking you me a starting caliber defensive lineman,
it's a good problem
as a rotational piece.
It's one of them good problems.
Yes.
Yeah. Shout out Marlo. So if you're asking me what I would prefer the Giants to do, I would prefer them to find the cap space elsewhere. Let Leonard Williams play out the final year of his deal and then be done with it. You're not going to have dead money next year. You don't have to extend him. So I don't see why it's that big a deal, unless Joe Shane and Wink Martindale love the guy so much that they actually want him beyond next year. If that's the case, fine. Then extend him for another year or two just to lower this year's cap hit. But they really don't need that much more cap space. I think after all of the signings that they've made, they're what, $3 million over? They need three and change for this draft class, which is a new and fuzzy feeling because they're picking 25th overall, not second or third overall. So they only need $3 million for their draft class, and what, call it another $10 million for depth pieces that are coming in, maybe 12. So you need to clear 15, 16 million in cap space to be in a bit of a healthier spot. You can do that by extending Adoree Jackson. I'd prefer they don't touch Saquon and they just let him play on the franchise tag, but there are ways to get creative, convert some money into bonuses, extend a few other guys, and let Leonard Williams play out the final year of this deal and see what happens. That's my preferred route.
Yeah, I think with Leonard Williams, the one thing that's been talked about is the Grady Jarrett extension, which was 3 years, $45 million, $15 million a year. The thing is that when you're about to extend Dexter Lawrence and pay him north of $20 million a year, it's hard to have that much money tied to your interior defensive line, not even your full defensive line, just the interior. It's tough. And then especially if you don't have depth behind them, cheap depth, meaning those late round picks, and you have to pay dish out, you know, those $9, $10 million contracts, those 3 year, $9 million deals, you know, it adds up. It adds up. I'm not touching Saquon Barkley.
I agree.
Barkley has, I mean, you guys want to talk about a misguided approach. Why Barkley didn't take $13 million a year that was offered is still astonishing. But I'm not, at this point, I don't see why the Giants would offer anything more than what they offered at the trade at the during the season, which was 12.5.
Agreed. I
don't see why you would go more. But yeah, you can extend Adoree Jackson. But my question about Adoree Jackson is, what is he? I mean, he's our cornerback one by default because he's our best cornerback, but is he a true cornerback one? Because I saw him struggle.
I think he's a mid to low end cornerback one.
Yeah.
So then you have to look at the extension. I mean, JC Jackson
is that in an ideal world, he is a very good CB2.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Like what he was the year before, where Bradbury was opposite him. Exactly. And that's the ideal world. Yeah.
Yes. The thing about the extension is that you offer him an extension. You got to look at, okay, what are players in his tier?
JC Jackson, you know, getting, was bad last year.
And he got, I think, a 16. His per year salary is $16.5 million. I know his is a 5 year deal, but so you get extending these guys, it's all fine and free up cap space now. But when you talk about the future, I mean, it's tough to look at it and say, okay, well, Adoree, we're extending him. We're going to pay him $17 million a year for the next 3 years. That's a lot of money to dish out to a guy that.
He's already the 14th highest paid corner in football right now, based on AAV. He's already 14th at $13 million a year. I mean, the only
Tell me who's making between $16 and $18 million a year.
So 16.5 is JC Jackson. That's the
right. That's the floor of any lowest extension, right
and
there.
And then Darius Slay.
What is James Bradbury?
I think so.
I think he's at 14, but. My point is that if you start extending these guys, you're looking at contracts that are going to be 14, 15, 16 million. For a cornerback two, because they still have to find a cornerback one, it's tough. Another interesting person that, or a name that they could restructure is actually Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor has 1 year left on his deal after this year.
Stop.
I'm just saying he has a $5 million base salary that you can convert and free up $4 million right there. I mean, he's your backup essentially for this year and next year, which I don't see anything wrong with that. But there's not a lot of options. You could extend Dexter Lawrence. He has a $12 million cap hit.
Yeah, that's the obvious one.
You could extend him and bring that $12 million down. So there's different ways, but the options are very limited. And I think we all agree we don't want to extend Saquon Barkley at this point. I mean,
not at the numbers that are being floated, no. If he wants to take 9, 10, sure, but anything more.
Here's the thing. You know, obviously, Joe Shane's not going to do this, and the Giants are not going to do this to Saquon. But wouldn't you just pull the $12 million offer and say the best we can do is 10?
Like, yeah, two franchises? I mean,
if you wanted to, if you were going to be cutthroat, play hardball, that's absolutely what you do.
Is that what you do?
Because if he wants to sit out the year, God bless you, but good luck trying to find. That's really the only leverage he has. Yeah. That's all he can do because he's under the tag.
Like, don't you say, well, Saquon, based on the market, like Miles Sanders is worth, $6 million a year? Yeah. We think you're maybe 40%, 50% more the player that he is. So the best we're going to do is $10 million, $11 million.
Listen, the market dictates the contract.
Yeah. I mean, they won't do this because you don't want to play that kind of game with Saquon because he is important to the organization.
I mean, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. He's the one that turned down $13.5 million. Like, that's well known at this point.
I agree, and he played it horribly. That's why you have to revisit. If you're going to revisit that, you're going to have to say, well, this is what the market is. And the crazy thing about them that is Austin Eckler, who requested a trade,
yeah.
like his situation is still unsettled. Jamal Williams, who had 18, what do you have, 18 touchdowns last year?
He didn't go for much. 17.
So
1,000 yards and 17 touchdowns. He broke Barry Sanders' franchise touchdown record, and he didn't even get retained.
Honestly speaking, I know your stance on paying running backs, and this is a question for both of you. If Barkley were to hit the open market, what type of contract would he get in terms of per year?
10 to 11 million.
I could see him getting as much as 12. I think 12 is the ceiling for the appetite out there of what running backs are going to get in today's NFL. Maybe a really bad team just wants to throw money at it, have one marketable player. They'd go 12 and a half, sure. But do you really want to go to the Texans? Do you want to go
to the Panthers?
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to go to a really bad team? And yeah, you could be the face of the team, make a little bit more money, but you know, you're not going anywhere. You're not going to win.
Yeah, Saquon doesn't care about winning. He's been losing his entire professional career.
Ooh.
Who let Will in here?
Yeah, I know. I got him in my earpiece right here.
So those are the questions that have to be asked is, well, what is his market value? Because we don't want to just pay him. You don't want sentimental stuff getting in the way of reality, right? You like
him. Listen, and by the way, are we still sure that that $12.5 million offer is still on the table?
If it is and he hasn't signed it,
he's an idiot.
Because why wouldn't he sign it at this point?
Yeah. It is double than what the highest paid running back got on the open market. And I know it's been a weird free agency, but this is back-to-back years where we're starting to see the running back market really, really, really just hit a big wall.
Don't play
running back. It's corrected. Yeah. It's overcorrected. I mean, look, who's going to sign Zeke?
True. Like,
it's overcorrected now. For a few years there, it got a little crazy. You had a few guys who really popped off, had good years. And then you've seen the buyer's remorse. You see what happened with Le'Veon Bell. You saw what happened with Todd Gurley, with all these guys who've signed Zeke.
There was a four-year span where there was a big run on like elite running backs, and I think that's why a lot of teams paid them. But I mean, we're seeing what's happening now. Like, it's,
let's find our own Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round. Let's find
Ahmad Bradshaw 2.0.
A ruck somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you guys. Yep.
They signed Leonard Johnson, I believe is his name, today.
Yeah, a lot of commotion on my timeline because of that, or my mentions.
I don't think it's like negative commotion. I think it's more confusion.
Can I say something? Why do people not Google things anymore?
Well, to be fair, this one is like not an obvious situation. Like, I feel like we rarely see this type of signing. Like, he was draft eligible last year, but because he tore his ACL, I guess he went undrafted, didn't sign or stick with the team at all last year. So I guess technically he's a free agent. Like, that's just not a common thing that we see.
But if you don't go drafted, you're automatically going to a pool of UDFAs.
Right, but again, like with an injury, like I don't know. I feel like when's the last time the Giants did that? Like someone got like a 3-year contract after missing an entire like an off year. And I understand like it's predicated on him making the roster. Right. And I like the signing. Again, it's another low risk, high reward deal. So I have no issue with it. I just think it's, you know, I don't blame people for being confused.
Body. It's a camp body right now.
I trust the pro personnel department. They know what they're looking for.
Exactly. It's a good feeling.
It's a camp body. Like if they would have signed this dude in like last August, we're not having this conversation. But because this is the type of signing that happens after the draft, you know, sign your pool of UDFAs. The reason why it happened now and everyone saw three, which by the way, remember I told you guys a couple weeks ago how it's so obvious when an agent writes a tweet for a reporter.
Yes, Schefter. Yeah. It's become very obvious when Schefter. This deal was negotiated by Drew Rosenhaus.
Yeah. This thanks, thing, Adam. Like this whole, if the person that reported Aaron Wilson, if you look at, like I did a search of him and the player the Giants signed, he's been pushing a lot of things for this player.
Okay.
Which good for him. Hey, listen, what you got to do. But it was obvious that the agent wrote that tweet because 3-year deal. It's not really a 3-year deal.
That's the standard. That's the standard thing. One last thing, if we can, because what does Tunsil's extension mean for the Giants? Because Thomas is coming up now, and that's a big number. That's a really big number.
The big thing that people need to keep in mind is that at 29 years old, Laremy Tunsil has once again reset the market. And 24-year-old Andrew Thomas.
Could you imagine what Laremy Tunsil would have done if he had not smoked weed?
Well, he would have been richer earlier.
Laremy Tunsil had a rough start to his career too in Miami.
Yeah, dude.
It took a little while to get it going. Yes. Yeah.
And then goes to Houston and takes off. Listen, the quicker the Giants sign Andrew Thomas to an extension, the better it is for them.
Because you know what? The left guard play and the center play is only going to get better over the next year. And it's going to make him look even better than he already is.
I floated, throw him 8 years, $200 million. You know, $100 million in guarantees. I have no problem giving Andrew Thomas a historic contract. And same thing for Dexter Lawrence. These are when you get a guy that's a reset the market guy, elite level player. It doesn't
in their prime, and you're buying the prime years. That's the
he's not in his prime yet. That's the scary thing.
Yeah, Andrew Thomas. Yes.
Yeah.
Those type of things don't concern me. Like, oh my God, what are we gonna do? They're gonna pay him. That's what's gonna happen. Look at the top of the market. You know, Google, great friend. Google highest paid offensive lineman. Look at the top of the list. At a couple million, and that's where Andrew Thomas is going to be. Like that, that's how it's going to work. Tristan Wirfs is up. There's going to be a couple linemen there up, but the quicker this happens, the better for the Giants.
The interesting thing about it is the top of the market at left tackle is all guys in their late 20s and early 30s, where it's Trent Williams, Tunsil, Bakhtiari, Ronnie Stanley, Jake Matthews, Colton Miller. These are all dudes who are like 28, 31, and the Giants are going to be buying Andrew Thomas's 25, 26, 27, 28, 29 year old season. So there's a world in which he does 5 years, one like 20, and then says 5 years. Yeah, he could realistically, if he wanted to,
be a rich man.
You have to look at the Tyron Smith deal back when Tyron Smith signed his first contract. It was like a 10-year, $120 million deal. And at the time, everyone was like, whoa, this is unprecedented. But, you know, after like the third or fourth year of his deal, everyone was like, that's a bargain because you have an elite left tackle essentially making, $10 to $15 million per year.
And making wide receiver 2.5.
Yes. So that's why I think giving Andrew Thomas sort of like that 8-year type thing or 7-year type thing, to me, that's a lot better than what Tunsil did, which is smart for him going 3 years.
Because that's what Trent Williams has been doing for a few years now, where he's been doing the 3 years where after one or two, it resets. And he's consistently reset the market for himself. And he's 35. Like, he could walk away right now, but he's probably going to keep racking these one-year deals as long as he's still an elite player.
Got to lock him up. Got to lock up Andrew Thomas. Yeah. Whether it's this year, during the season, next year, the New York Giants have a cornerstone franchise left tackle. Something Ethan, you, me, Nick, everyone has been dying for.
Yep.
So paying him should be an honor.
Top priority.
Yeah.
An honor. I like that.
You like that one?
For the great Andrew Thomas.
For the great Andrew Thomas.
You're making him sound like a president. What president was Andrew Thomas? What number was that in the list?
He does that as a president name, Andrew Thomas.
Yeah.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Although I did get a 5 on AP US history. So.
Yeah. Speaks to the education system, not your intelligence.
Yeah, true. Shout out Ms. Chauvin. Cheated on every test. anyway, I think that's the
statute of limitations up on that.
Who cares?
I stopped paying attention to presidents after this latest election.
There we go.
Just kidding.
Oh, the tinfoil hat's coming out.
I told you guys I'm a admitted conspiracy theorist. A big man admits
you did admit conspiracy that. Theorist. Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm just kidding.
If you see Weiss in Midtown Manhattan tomorrow,
listen, I live very close to the Capitol. Okay, so
where were you on January 6th?
Exactly. There you go.
All right, we'll wrap it up. Yeah. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick and Nick Zeraris. The blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. You know the deal. We're everywhere. We'll talk to you guys very soon.